compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hello and good morning. Welcome back. Hope you had your 21-hour rest. I did. My number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. You can call that number now. If you call early in the show, I can get you on the air pretty easily. As it goes further into the hours, it tightens up significantly. So give me a call now if you want to, 888-914-9149. Cyrus, I have a serious question for you.
A real serious question?
Aren't they always?
Sure. All right, what's your question?
All right, have you ever owned a Ferrari?
No, I have never owned a Ferrari.
Not even once?
Not even. I've never even been in a Ferrari.
But you know what they are. They're very high-end luxury automobiles, the kind that you and I could never afford.
Yeah, they're not exactly family sedans.
No. No, that's a good way to put it. Well, I think most people, and you're one of them, would know about, from the movie Ferris Bueller's Day Off, the Ferrari that is part of the storyline. I don't want to give anything away. What was that? What was that you said, sir?
It is so choice. If you have the means, I highly recommend picking one up.
That's the one. That's the one. That's the part.
the one they destroyed?
Well, at the very end. Because, okay, so Cameron's dad is very paranoid about this car. He loves the car more than he loves his son, Cameron. Cameron knows this. You never see the dad, by the way, but you do see the car that he loves so much. It's a showpiece. It's in a climate-controlled room. He never drives it. He knows exactly how many miles are on the odometer, and it's not many. And Ferris Bueller... And I feel kind of ridiculous explaining this to you because you've seen the movie a billion times, but just for the sake of somebody who may not be familiar, Ferris Bueller convinces Cameron, these are high schoolers, seniors in high school, and he convinces him to take this prized possession of his father's, a car he never drives, he never even touches it because he doesn't want it to get hurt in any way. He convinces Cameron to let them borrow it and take it out for a day of joyriding and sightseeing and going to different things while they're playing hooky. You know the story. So that red car sold at auction. This is the part I thought you might find interesting, Cyrus. And by the way, it is so choice. And I mean, if you have the means, I highly recommend it.
It is so choice. If you have the means, I highly recommend picking one up.
Yeah. Just, you know, write a check for it or put it on your debit card. So it sold at auction, this particular car that was in the movie. It's a Ferrari 250 GT California. And it sold for $337,500, which in itself doesn't necessarily surprise me. But here's the catch. It doesn't even run. You can't drive it. It's not operable. It's just the car.
Well, of course it doesn't run.
What'd I do? You killed the car.
You killed the car.
Well, that was a stunt double. So they actually used a different vehicle for when it smashes out the window and then crashes down into the gully down there. A little tidbit here from the New York Post. A genuine California Spider Ferrari is one of the most sought-after classic cars, selling for over $15 million. The producers of the movie chose to have Modena Design and Development make three highly detailed copies for the 1986 movie. This crash car was built and used solely for the memorable sequence as it hurled backward through the glass of his father's garage, falling to the ground below. The prop car has all the Ferrari finishes. It was built as a display piece, constructed with a fiberglass body, bolted to a rolling chassis. The faux Ferrari, or Ferrari, as they have here, very clever, had all of the exact things, but it's not a functioning car. There's no engine. There's no drivetrain. So that was all sound effects.
Wait, so it's not even a car. It's a prop.
It's a prop. It's a prop. So it's the body and the wheels and the tires and the chrome and the rearview mirror and the leather seats, and that's it. You couldn't drive it if you wanted to.
The magic of movies.
$337,500 for a car that
will never drive. It's not real. It's not a real car.
No, that's a good way to put it. It's not a real car. It's like the Pinocchio of cars. You know, it's not a real boy, Pinocchio. Well, he becomes a real boy. You know that story, don't you?
I do. I'm still, you're kind of ruining Ferris Bueller for me here. So I'm going to pretend that I didn't hear any of this. The car was real. It all really happened. And you know why there was never a sequel to Ferris Bueller?
Why is that?
Because he didn't have a friend anymore.
Oh, his friend got clobbered by his dad?
Got clobbered by his dad. That's right. Man.
Well, you know, there's the pretty high likelihood of that. So that leads me to another story I want to share in just a second. We're going to go to the phones in a moment, 888-914-9149. That's about kids who become adults, but they never really grow up, or at least they don't grow up in some ways that people expect. Pew Research. Now, two actual articles here that are interesting. One has to do with the toy industry, and this is from CNBC, and I'd like to share some details on that in a few minutes. But this has to do with this huge section of the toy industry, but it's toys for adults. You know, like cartoons for adults. Maybe that started with The Simpsons, I guess. But now there's just a whole array of cartoons that are for adults who watch cartoons. That's what they watch. And there's also an interesting tie-in from Pew Research about how many young adults are still living with their parents. I know it's kind of a trope or a meme, you know, the 40-year-old guy who lives in his parents' basement, but that's real. And the number of people who are in that category is getting bigger. So here are some tidbits from the Pew Research. The share of young adults in the U.S. who are living with a parent has grown considerably in recent decades, a trend that many Americans see as bad for society. This is a Pew survey that was done in October of 2021. Over a third of Americans, 36%, say that more young adults living with their parents is bad for society. 16% say it's good for society. They don't give any reasons, but nearly half of Americans, 47%, say it doesn't make a difference. I probably would be in the first category. Where would you fall, Cyrus, if you were polled? Where it's not good for society, it's good for society,
no,
or it's not really, it doesn't matter?
I don't think it's good. I was just having this conversation yesterday. You know how like an egg, a bird and an egg has to break its way out of the egg? And right. It built its strength, and it looks like the bird's struggling, but it'll finally break out and fly away. If you break the egg for a bird, you see it struggling, it's like, oh, I'm just going to help this little bird out, and I'm going to break the egg for it. The bird won't get strong enough, and it'll die. Mm. So I think there is something, it's okay to struggle when you're a young adult, to go out in the world and maybe not have everything super easy for you. I think that actually is good for you.
Yes, I agree 100%. It's the old motto, sink or swim. If you don't start thrashing in the water, if you don't start trying to swim, you're going to sink. So you better get swimming. Even if you don't know how to swim, you learn how to swim. I agree 100%. And I know that you and I have talked before about you had a hard Scrabble upbringing. I did not have a hard Scrabble upbringing. I had, I just had really good parents who were protective of us, and you know, they fed us and clothed us, and we lived in a very pleasant home. So I didn't have deprivation the way so many people do, you know. So I can't relate to that personally, but I have empathy for people in that situation. When I would come home from school, my mom was there. She didn't work outside the home, so we had a lot of those kind of advantages going for us. But my parents did not have much, if any, in the way of like extra money, and they didn't live large. Some of our neighbors did, but we never did because we didn't have the money. One income family. And I just remember like the finer things in life for me when I was growing up was if we got to stop at the donut store after Mass on Sunday. Wow, I feel like high society this morning. Or if we'd go out to, very occasionally, we'd go out to eat at a restaurant, and you know, it'd be like Sizzler. It wouldn't be Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. Although those didn't exist in those days. So the reason I'm saying that, Cyrus, is that, and I'd like to hear what you went through, but for me, it was like, we're not paying for your college. If you want to go to college, great, go. But you have to work for it. You have to earn your own money. And that's what I did. There was no financial wherewithal that my parents could provide to me. And I'm the oldest of eight kids, so they had a full house. So for me, without realizing it, without even really them telling me this, I had to learn to swim instead of sink. And that is kind of what's going on with these statistics here. It seems like more and more, and this is a maybe a symbiotic relationship here, because more and more young adults are deciding to just not get out there in the world and make things happen and get going. They would rather stay at home and play video games in many cases. And the other thing is the parents who see this as an okay thing. Yeah, okay, sure, you can live with this. How old are you now? 30, 35, even older. What's your reaction?
I don't know why you would want to live with your parents when you were that old. I mean, is it? I look at my kids. I'm not raising kids. I'm raising future adults. So they have to take care of themselves because I'm not going to be here forever. So if you're learning how to take care of yourself at 40, that's pretty late in the game.
I'll say. I mean, you should be learning how to take care of yourself by the time you're 18 years old. Give me an example. Here's what I'm talking about. I really don't understand the mindset. I'm not attacking anybody. Please understand. Different people have different ways of doing things. So I'm not judging. I'm not attacking. No heat, no judgment. I'm just saying, for me, it's hard to understand why a parent would pay for a 22, 23, 24, 25-year-old son or daughter's cell phone bill or car insurance or car payment, outside of some emergency where you need to help your child. That's, that's different. That's understandable. But when they grow up and they're just accustomed to mom and dad paying for all these things as a matter of course without having to work for it, I really don't think you're going to value those things. You're also not going to see the value of the hard work and effort that goes into earning the money so that you can have a cell phone and car insurance and a car, things like that. But when you have to work for it and it's your money that you're spending, I think it teaches frugality. It also teaches the value of money, which is not a deep concept, but I fear that maybe that is becoming less and less of a well-known thing nowadays. Any thoughts, Cyrus, before we press on?
No, my son is 16 years old and he's not interested in any extracurricular activity. So he's not playing sports. He's not in theater. And so I made him get a job. I was like, look, you can't just come home and stare at screens all day. Mm-hmm. And so now he works at McDonald's and he wants to drive. So he's going to be paying for insurance and his mm-hmm. gas money. That's the way it goes.
That's good. I endorse that completely, 100%. That's how we did it with our kids. We said, okay, you want you're 16 years old, you want to drive, or you're 15 and a half, you want to drive, great. You're going to have to go to driving school. That's going to cost $250, or at least that's what it was back then. So you're going to have to get a job to save your money to pay for driving school. Well, okay. So they get the job, they save up their money. They go to driving school. Okay, great. So now you're qualified to go get your license, but you have to have insurance. Now you're not able to be on your own plan until you're, 18, I guess. So between now and the time you're 18, we will have you as a driver on our plan, and we'll have the insurance agent break out how much more we're paying per month for you to be on the plan, and that's how much you're going to pay us each month for the privilege of being a driver on our insurance plan. And one by one, that's what they all did. They had to fork out every month, $100, $150, whatever it was. And if one of them got a ticket and the rate went up, well, what they had to pay us went up too. And then when they turned 18, every single one of them, they immediately had to spin off, not that day, not like, oh, today's your birthday, guess what? You have to get your own car insurance plan. But the following day, sure. So they would spin off. They'd have to get their own car insurance that they had to pay for. Wasn't on mom and dad's plan. Same thing with the phone as well. When you're 18, you have to get on your own phone plan independent of us. And I think I mentioned this before. I'll leave it at this, Cyrus, because I don't want to overemphasize this. But one of my sons, who's well into adulthood, married with children, very successful, and he's just doing really well, thanks be to God. He came up to me, a couple years ago, and he said, Dad, we used to really butt heads, and I used to really resent you, and I was angry because you made me, when I was 16 years old, 17 years old, I wanted a new pair of jeans. You said, well, go buy them. Or when I had to go to driving school to get my license. You made me pay for it. And all the other things that I just enumerated. He says, "There, I went through a stretch of time, Dad, where it really bothered me and I was angry and resentful because you did this." He said, "But now that I'm in my mid-30s, now that I have children of my own and I have perspective," he said, "I now see why you did that and I'm really grateful." Those were his exact words. He says, "I'm really grateful that you did that, even though I didn't like it and I chafed under this at the time. I look back on it now and I say, what a gift, because had you not done that, I wouldn't have learned many of these lessons of self-sufficiency and sink or swim kind of thing." And so that really touched me, that he just sought me out and he told me this heart to heart, made me feel good, made me feel validated.
That is one of the greatest compliments that I have yet to receive from my children, but I'm fingers crossed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping.
Yeah, well, I know you will be able to start telling us about your family experiences in a few years once those kids get out there. One or two quick more statistics, and then we will take a break and then go to phone calls. Attitudes, according to those who were surveyed, they differ significantly according to race, ethnicity, age, gender, income, and political party. White adults, 40% worth, are more likely than Black, 26%, Hispanic, 28%. And Asian Americans, 23%, these are the adults, by the way, to say that more young adults living with their parents is bad for society. So it's not the majority of white adults, but it's a significant minority. It's certainly not I would say it's a significant minority for Black and Hispanic and Asian. But in other words, if I'm translating these statistics accurately, the greater majority of them would say it is good for society, or at least it's not bad. They are also the least likely to see this as a good thing. 12% say this versus 24% of Black parents, 23% of Hispanic parents, 27% of Asian parents. I think a lot of this may be cultural, in fact. Across age groups, larger shares say more adults living with their parents is bad for society than good for society. But adults younger than 30 are less likely than older adults to see it as a bad thing. Men are more likely than women to say it's bad for society, and more young people are living with their parents, or that more young people are living with their parents. So the ratio on that is 42% of the men say it's bad. Only 31% of the women surveyed said it's bad. Upper income people, regardless of their race, 46% are more likely to say that it's bad. Lower income people tend to say that it's good. A smaller share of Democrats and Democrat-leaning independents than Republicans and Republican-leaners. After a while, this gets a little bit tedious to try to quote all of it, and I don't want to bore you with it, but it's an interesting thing. And when we come back, we'll take some phone calls. Also, I want to talk about this phenomenon of kidults, as they're being described. Kids who are responsible for 1/4 of all toy sales annually. I'll tell you about that, too. And your phone calls right after this. The University of Mary, our sponsor, has a Christmas gift for you, but you'll have to wait for the Three Kings to arrive to hear about the special opportunity. A tuition-free nursing academy with applications closing January 31st.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
In many ways, that was a really good movie. I wish they could have cleaned it up just a little bit, taken the profanity out. It was unnecessary, but a fun movie anyway. Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. The number is 888-914-9149. We'll go first, to Mary in Minneapolis. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Patrick, and Merry Christmas to you and the whole gang at Relevant Radio. I'm an ardent listener to you and the programs, and I just wanted to say very quickly that I'm responding to what you said about the society now where there's a lot of youth, well, we would say older, maybe young adults, they're in their 20s plus, 3 plus, living at home with parents. And I just want to share real quickly that when we were kids growing up, I'm your age, and there was far more parents living together in the home. And now we have such brokenness, 50% of marriages or more are not making it. And so society now is so much different than when we were raised. that it's not a surprise to see that there are a number of people in that age group staying at home. And if, with all the brokenness going on, too, and the way that we were raised, the differences there, now
that's
we're
true.
Seeing this escalation of insecurity. And I think there's a way of maybe the young reaching out to saying, you know, this is the most stable place I can be right now. I can afford this. I can live here. Life is hard out there. There's a lot of people struggling, not even able to hold on a job. So I think we have to be careful not to hook so much into what statistics say, but the reality of life, that life has changed so much, but what we're living with now and with all that's going on with the economy and the country and everything, it's a very difficult time. And so I think maybe people are maybe not even aware of the fact that they're seeking that stability back again in that childhood, hoping to have some kind of stability. I guess that's what I just wanted to share.
No, I understand what you're saying, and I concur with your points about how drastically different society is now compared to when we were growing up. I mean, you and I were kids in the 60s and teenagers in the 70s.
Yeah.
So I fully grant your point. That is all true. But to play devil's advocate, the way I look at it, Mary, is the statistics can be interpreted in any number of different ways. And if when you read this Pew survey itself, you see what they were simply asking is, regardless of the causes of this taking place, some of which you correctly, you know, identified, is it nonetheless still a good thing? Is it indifferent or is it bad for society that this is happening? And I think that is an important question to ask. Is it, regardless of the reasons, regardless of what is motivating this to happen? In some cases, I think it's inertia, but, you know, the idea of wanting to be connected to your family, this is a more, you know, affordable place for me to live. And that raises the question, I wonder how many of these parents are even charging their adult children any rent. Maybe they are, maybe they're not. But ultimately, though, I don't think it's good for the children who are now adults to do this any longer than is necessary. Because then they become, in my view, and maybe men and women look at this differently, but in my view, If you as the son or the daughter who are now 30, 35, 40 years old, and you're still living at home, what does that say about your ability or even your willingness to get out and work? If you take the easiest possible route, is that really good for a society that is known for inventing things and building things? And I personally don't think it's good, regardless of what the reasons are. That's kind of the direction I'm coming at it from. What do you think?
I agree to a degree. I do. I do think that, yes, you want to make that incentive to be on their own, and that's what life should be, right? We're on our own. We're independent. I just think there's a danger, though, in misjudging people's circumstances where, for instance, if a parent is ill and the other parent died, and they're in a situation where they have to care for that parent in the home or put them off in a, you know, a nursing home. Where we live in a country that is more apt to do that, where other countries will take care of their elderly in the home. They'll live with the grandparents till they die.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just, you know, reality.
I'm thinking of the Waltons.
A different type of culture.
My favorite TV show, the grandparents live there. But notice one thing, though, if I may, that there is no judging going on in this program. I wasn't judging anybody or drawing, you know, opinions about people's motivations or anything like that. It's there's a big variety out there, and I don't think this poll, the Pew poll, it's not intended that I read to judge anybody, but to analyze what are the results of these decisions, and is this what do people think it's good or bad? That's what I'm looking at. Is it's interesting to see how many, the great majority of parents, according to these polls, and really across all different categories. Far more of these parents say it's good or at least not bad than are saying that it's bad. What surprised me was that the number of parents who are saying this is bad for society is a minority compared to maybe two-thirds who think it's good. That in itself surprised me because I would have figured it would be the opposite.
Right. Yeah. So that is surprising. And maybe, again, through it all, you know, hopefully a greater good will come, you know, eventually from that too. And just trying to go forward, trying to, you know, again, I think when we have it right with God and right with our families, and then the good comes from all that too. And again, it's wonderful that we have a merciful God that is with us and through all of our life changes and stages in life and helping us. And I think I just want to say very quickly, thank you and God bless you for all that you do in Relevant Radio.
Thanks,
because we definitely need you as a voice to help people realize why we're here. You know, it's to love, serve God, and to have that peace that only He can give. So with that, I want to wish you a Merry Christmas, and thank you so much for allowing me to take my phone call. And God
bless
you all.
Happy to do so. Thanks. Hope we do that again. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Melissa. Where is Melissa? Minneapolis. Good morning, Melissa. Welcome.
Hello, Patrick. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Thank you. And to you as well.
Cyrus as well. Thank you. I just wanted to say that I agree with you and Cyrus about raising adults versus kids, and the comment on Sink or Swim. I remember having a conversation just recently with, I work in the healthcare field, and I was talking to a patient, and I was saying to myself that, you know, they have their child at home right now, and I was saying to myself, well, I'm hoping that...
How old is the child at home?
Like, they have that older child at home, yeah. And I was
so still
like,
a minor child or an adult child?
No, an adult child.
Okay.
And I was like, well, if it was my kids, I'm all about, you know, tough love. You know, get them out as soon as they can, you know, when they're able to at 18. Mm-hmm. And then she made the comment, well, I don't want my child to be homeless. I was wondering what your thoughts were on that comment. And then I also had a question, but I guess I'll have you speak to that question, that comment first.
Okay, yeah, that's a powerful question you're asking me as a father and as a grandfather now. It's powerful because it's visceral. It has a visceral impact to me emotionally to even just imagine one of my sons or daughters being homeless, living under a bridge, or picking food out of a dumpster, or living in a tent anywhere in Southern California where these tent cities have popped up. It's a heartbreaking thought. So as a father, I would do anything to save my sons or daughters from having to do that. If it was within my power to solve that problem for them, I would do it in a heartbeat. I would say, come live with us if you need to. We have a spare bedroom. We have many spare bedrooms. So I'm not saying that the parents should be callous or hard-hearted or, you know, to not care about their children's welfare. I would crawl over broken glass, and I think any good parent would do the same, to do whatever I had to do to rescue a son or daughter from something like that. Nonetheless, my philosophy, tell me what you think, is, and this might seem a bit counterintuitive, but maybe not. My philosophy is, if you coddle children into adulthood and do for them the things they should learn how to do for themselves, like after a while, you stop wiping your child's bottom. That child has to wipe his own bottom. You do it until it's time for him or her to do it, and then you move on. Getting dressed, tying your shoes, making your own food. You know what I'm saying? So my philosophy is that the child is maybe has a greater likelihood of winding up homeless living under a bridge if parents are always doing for that child. And then mom dies or dad dies or something else happens, and now he's on his own and he's 30, 35 years old, and he doesn't have any work skills, and he doesn't have any drive, and he doesn't have any experience in actually getting ahead in life. I think his likelihood of living under a bridge goes way up versus the parents who made their children, like Cyrus was describing, you have to work. You have to get your own. You know what I'm saying? So what do you think about that? Because that's how I react to the question that you asked. Very powerful question.
Well, I absolutely agree with that too. And I have three young children. And so what I am trying to do, and the plan that my husband and I are trying to do, is, you know, enable our children to be capable and responsible citizens in this world. And to do small things and take responsibility for the things that they do. And, you know, just also using lessons of what our faith tells us too on, you know, being responsible and showing mercy and love and compassion to others, but also giving opportunities for learning when you know, when it presents itself, like good life lessons.
So your kids are little. I'm guessing grammar school age or maybe younger than that?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Are you doing anything yet, you and your husband, like, you know, any practical lessons or any things that you're doing thus far to sort of instill those ideas in your children's minds?
Yeah, like, well, let's just say earning allowances, small chores. For Christmas, for example, the kids have been working towards getting a few things, earning a few dollars so that they can go buy gifts for their siblings. And I'm planning on taking them, hopefully tomorrow if the weather's good, to go buy some gifts for themselves. Does that answer the question that you've been asking?
Yeah, it does. And yeah. I realize that you're in the early stages of bringing the kids up. Wouldn't it be interesting if you and I could have the same conversation 20 years from now when your kids are now adults?
I plan on keep listening to you. I appreciate the advice you give as a parent. And I have one last question if I do have time for that.
Sure, go for it.
Okay. So speaking of raising children and just walking through life together, my husband and I, we're working through some therapy right now. And I was just wondering, as we're having conversations and trying to talk, but we're feeling stuck about, like, our mission and our goal and, like, having a focus. I mean, we want to raise good children. We want to raise them up in the faith. But then I feel like we kind of lose our sense of our direction and our path on things. And I'm wondering about, like, a mission statement and how a couple can, you know, a resource or some things that we can look into or possibly a book that can help us better form, like, you know, how we can better form our consciences as our mission as a couple and as a family. So we stay in that direction. We stay focused on God. We stay focused on, you know, the things to help build each other up in our marriage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a question no one has ever asked me. So let me try off the cuff. Relevant Radio's mission statement is bringing Christ to the world through the media. So it's succinct. It's clear. People can understand what that means. And maybe if you wanted to follow something like that, doesn't have to be a lengthy mission statement. Maybe it could be something like helping each other, you know, serving and loving each other in an effort to cooperate with God's grace so that we and our children go to heaven and we help as many other people as possible along the way. Now, that's a bit rambling, but maybe something like that. For some, it's going to be to have the best vacations possible, or to live in the finest home money can buy, or to get our kids a great education, or maybe all of the above. But if you're looking beyond those passing things and you're looking toward the ultimate goal, those ideas come to my mind.
Yep.
There's a good book.
I'm feeling stalled. I'm like, that goal is like, I want to get to heaven. I want myself to get to heaven. And that's where I'm kind of feeling stuck. So, yeah, those little things will come into play. So,
try jotting it down, like make some lists of these phrases or ideas and even just keywords. And then over time, you and your husband just kind of bounce them back off each other. And what about this? What about that? And I wouldn't be surprised if after doing that and keying in on some of the concepts that are important to the two of you, that over time, a really good mission statement will emerge, you know, and it will be exactly what you're looking for. Before I go, Melissa, let me just recommend a book. I've always very much enjoyed this book by Fulton Sheen. It's called Three to Get Married. And there are other good books out there, but this one I think is a classic in the genre because he situates marriage, Christian marriage, as between the husband and the wife with God present as well. So he's the third person in this three to get married motif. And he talks about all kinds of things, decision-making, reconciliation if you're fighting, raising children, finances, all the different things that go into it. And what ultimately marriage is aiming at heaven. So that book, among all the others, I can very enthusiastically recommend to you.
Okay, Thank you. That's awesome. That's what I was hoping, is just a step in a direction. Someone like Paul
Christine
is perfect. I look up to that thing. I look up to, is he blessed? Venerable. He's venerable. Venerable Fulton Sheen.
Yeah. He came this close to being beatified, and then church politics got in the way and messed that up, unfortunately.
Well, God bless you guys, and Merry Christmas to you both. Everybody at
Thank you.
The Radio. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And to your family as well. Okay, quick timeout. We're going to come back with more of your phone calls. Here's the number, 888-914-9149. And no, I have not forgotten. I'm going to share with you some of the statistics that have come out recently about this group of consumers known as kidults, K-I-D-U-L-T-S, kidults. And the reason is because something approaching $10 billion annually of toy sales, and fully one-fourth of the toy sales is for adults. Why is that? How can that be? We'll explore that and your comments right after this. Our sponsor, the Catholic Order of Foresters, is here to help with this year's health insurance open enrollment. They offer individual, couple, and family options to best fit your needs. Before January 15th, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and relevantradio.com.
I want you for Christmas.
Now, who's this?
This is actually Cheap Trick.
Really?
Yeah. They did a parody of their own song. Christmas version of their own song.
Wow. I like the original way better than this version.
It's no contest.
I don't like this version.
No. But, time and a place for everything.
The Live at Budokan version of this song with all the screaming, cheering fans, it's the best. We have a large yard, and you could turn them down. And
please.
Those guys. So we have a large, large, large yard, a lot of grass, to the point where you need a rider mower. And so when I'm out there mowing the lawn in the pleasant months of the year, I have my ear pods in and I'm listening to music. And that's one of the, not that song, but the original one is one of the ones on my lawn mowing playlist loop. So not that you needed to know that. I just thought I'd share
now,
it with you.
But then when you hear the car, like that same song in the car, do you get like flashbacks of mowing the yard?
No, but I associate it with good vibes. I mean, to me, that's like, that was a cool song back when I was, a lot younger. And anyway, so I like that song. I don't like much else of Cheap Trick. I like a couple other ones, but that's probably the main one. Let's get back to the phones. Let's go now to, where are we going to go? Let's go to Rosie in New Mexico. Hi, Rosie.
Oh, hi, Patrick. Hold on, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Welcome.
Okay. All right.
I always startle people when I go to them. It's like they're not expecting to go on the air. It's your turn.
I know. I just had to make sure I had everything set up correctly so I'm not, breaking the rules. But just to begin with, I went to Cheap Trick concert, and it's probably the loudest band I've ever heard. The loudest concert.
What year was that?
My God, I want to say 86 or 85.
Yeah, they were in their heyday then. They were never a band that I followed, and I didn't really care at all about them. I liked one or two of their songs, but I never got into that.
Back to the topic. I did want to kind of disagree with the thinking that adult children coming back in the home is not good for society.
Okay.
So I'm a mother of three boys. One of them is in his 30s. The other two are, one's a minor still. He's a senior in high school. And then I have one that's going to college, second year in college. But my older child is back home after COVID from losing his job and has been a blessing. It has been a blessing for us as we're taking care of elderly parents in the home as well. So there's seven of us now in our home.
Okay. Sounds cozy.
And he does return. It's very cozy. It's probably, I am just deeply blessed because of it. And I would much rather have my son at home where we are assisting and he's assisting and we're working as a family group than have society try to help in any way when he ran into some problems. He did run into a drug addiction as well as homelessness. So I have been that parent that has gone through that happening to their child. And I do want to stress to you, he was raised in a Catholic home, went to Catholic school, and left our home his second year of college and was working at one of the bases here. He had a government job. And once he left home, it went downhill from there. He spiraled down. And he was always brought up to work, to be self-sufficient. And
you see, this, if I could jump in, Kathy, this is a great example of an exception to the rule, because he really does need to be plugged in with the family and the stability and the structure and the safety and all those things. So I'd like to maybe clarify where I'm coming from. You know, I never really liked math, but in college I had to take two courses on statistics and probability. Maybe you took some in college too. I did my first bachelor's degree is in business. So I had to take these classes in statistics and probability. And one of the things I remember from this class long, long ago was the bell curve and how in a given population of something that you're doing a statistical analysis on, the bell curve, it basically encompasses the vast majority of what we would consider typical, and that would fall within this big bell, if you imagine like drawing a bell. But at the bottom, the bell flares out to the right and to the left. So you've got, and depending on how you're doing this, you've got maybe 2.5% deviation, maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less. But on either end, you will have the outliers. You'll have the ones for whom they're just not typical. It's not the way the vast majority of things tend to sort out in the middle. What you're describing is, to my mind, a great example of that non-standard, you know, where it's some people really do need this, and their parents are saintly for taking them in and caring for them and all that. So I want to, number one, affirm what I hear you saying. I think it's great, and I don't oppose it. What I'm looking at is, across the board generally, is it the case that most children, when they grow into adulthood, fall within the general bell curve, or are they outliers? I think most of them fall within in terms of getting a job and, you know, maybe getting some college in, maybe not, getting married, things of that nature. So I fully endorse the model that you have whenever it's necessary. But I think generally speaking, though, most young people, if they are given the incentive to work hard and become self-sufficient, it's better for them in the long run than not. Does that make it where I'm coming from a bit clearer?
I understand what you're saying generally, but I just think even overall, it's better for parents to be involved no matter what age, because society is, and for them going out there, and if they run into problems, I mean, nobody's going to care for them more than a parent. And I understand what you're saying, to give them goals and to give them allowances for work done, or require them to get a job, pay their insurance and things like that. But times have changed now. It's totally different than when it used to be when we grew up closer to more family units than now. People are moving away and they don't have that support.
I would say, though, in response, all the more reason, it's all the more urgent why young people should have these things instilled in them, because of the challenges that they're going to face that earlier generations didn't have to face.
I agree with you in that they do they do need that, but I don't think it's bad for society when they move back in, for whatever reason it might be. I always think there's a reason.
What if it's laziness? What about that reason?
Pardon?
What if the reason is laziness? I don't want to work. I can live rent-free in my parents' house. I can play video games and eat pizza and drink beer, and I don't have to do anything. Would that be a good reason? Is that good for this child?
It's not good for the child, but it's good for society, if that's the argument, because you would...
How's it good for society if the... I'm not trying to be rude. I'm just trying to figure out what you mean. If you've got a 30-year-old, 35-year-old son who just doesn't want to work because he's lazy and he knows he can get a free ride at home with mom and dad paying the bills, how can that be a good reason? Yeah. How could that be good for him?
Well, I think it's good for him in the fact that at least he's not out there committing a crime or doing anything like that, because that's where that leads to, in my opinion. And at least the parents are there. And
wouldn't it be better if he just got a job?
And, you know what I mean? It would be better. It would be better. I'm not disagreeing with you overall, but if he's there, I'm sure he's saying, I'm lazy, I don't want to work, but he's got to be helping the family out in some way.
What if he's not?
It's not financially.
There are parents.
That would be a parental, that would be the parents' decision to do that.
Yeah, I think it would be a parental failure if you let your 35-year-old son come and live with you just out, not you personally, but just out of sheer laziness. Yeah. Well, fair enough. I'm glad that we at least agree on that issue. There are some reasons that reasons to do this.
Yes, I agree with you on that. But, okay. Well, you know, for me, it's been a blessing. So.
And well, God bless you and your family.
Yeah. In 2 years, he'll finish his accounting degree, and then he will hopefully move on. And on the second try, he won't fall to peer pressure or any of those bad habits. So, you know,
we'll say a little prayer for him and for you and your generous heart. Thanks, Rosie. Well, we don't have enough time to take another call because, yes, I know, Cyrus, a man's got to know his limitations. I know that. I've heard that before. But I'm coming back with 2 hours more.
Wow, Patrick.
So within those limitations.
You sounded like Dirty Harry just then.
She works for Rooney, doesn't she? Or she did, anyway. Okay, well, that's great. And I'm still going to tell you about the kidults. Grown-ups who are responsible for 1/4 of all toy sales annually. And I'll tell you about that too. Plus your phone calls, 888-914-9149. I'll be right back.
Well, with your bad knee, Ed, you shouldn't throw anybody.